Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
You can't happen to listen in, of course. You can always tune into YouTube later and see the whole show. And as a matter of fact, be sure that you put June the 6th on your calendar. That's next weekend, and it will be the Fondren Bottle Tree Garden Tour. Okay? Okay. Fun stuff. We'll talk with her in the next hour. Lance, I have another question for you. Have you ever practiced percussive maintenance?
Percussive maintenance? I don't know about all that now.
That's when you kick it and it starts working again?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like the refrigerator.
Of course. If you do that with today's items, you may not.
It's a little trickier. It's a little trickier. But there are reasons, though. It's the same thing as, the person comes and you spend $125 an hour, and what they do is actually unplug your computer and plug it back in.
Oh, yeah. Did you do Control-Alt-Delete?
Exactly.
Oh, man, I forgot that one.
Oh, isn't this a beautiful mist bow you're showing us at supertalk.tv? That, of course, is from our dear friend John, and we miss him terribly, but we sure do love his art, and that's a shot up in the Mississippi Delta that I'm particularly fond of, the bow arc, as it were. It's a pretty thing. Pretty thing. That's another reason why y'all are so nice to tune into this program. We get to show off what we're doing and what everybody else is doing, too, at supertalk.tv. Today is International Hug Your Cat Day. Someone's going to have to tell my cat. She is not one that likes to be hugged very much. Ooh, my goodness, on the camera right now we're looking at Phlox. Now that Phlox, I have to tell you, it's magenta. It's even darker and brighter than most Robert Poor, which tells me it's had a good bit of phosphorus dumped on it, or else it's another variety. But what a beautiful plant. We don't see them bloom much until June, and then the Phlox really just take off. It's a beautiful cut flower as well as one in the garden. How nice. Oh, maybe this will go along with hugging your cat. Today is National Mint Julep Day. Bartender, may I tell you that I was once given a mint julep glass as a thank you for speaking in Atlanta. I didn't know what it was.
It's a good gift, a little pewter.
It's lovely, yeah, but I didn't know what it was. I didn't ask, of course. I was too polite. But once I got home, I figured out what it was.
A mint julep is a delicious drink when done correctly. You know, simple.
I've never had that.
Very simple.
I've never had one. Mint and julep sounds like a good idea, though.
Yeah. You just crush them. You need like snow cone ice.
Oh,
that's
good.
That's the trick.
Yeah.
Some people put a little water and a dash of sugar, and then you throw the mint in. That gives it a little bit of a spearmint flavor. And then you just pour your bourbon right over the top of the ice. Garnish it with a little mint leaf, you know, and
off,
man,
you go.
You talking about good.
Well,
you can't handle many of them, but you know.
We hope you can.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Normal human beings. Super people can.
Yeah,
maybe.
No. Now, people who've been at this for a while, I understand, at things like the Kentucky Derby begin at, like, breakfast. You know, it's like,
we would have them come in to the bar during the few years I bartended in Oxford on a game day, and they were like, hey, we want a Kentucky Derby-style mint julep. And you're like, yeah, good luck.
Here's one. Yeah.
You got, like, 10 deep everywhere, and they're like, I don't have time for all that at the moment, man. But can't do it. But, yeah, it was, you know, they're great.
Well, and anything that involves kind of muddling mint is going to appeal to me at one level or another, because I just love the smell and taste of it.
I love making syrups, you know, whether it be from fruit, whether it be from certain herbs and spices and those types of things, infusing, doing things with tea, you know, and blending.
Sure.
It was really a lot of fun to play around, because being somebody that likes to grow some things, and you know, you grow some jalapenos or some cayennes and all these different things that you're producing, and then you go, I've got too much.
Let me see what I can do with this.
You can always do some cool stuff with it. You know? My mama taught me that with making pepper jellies and things of that nature, and I never really knew how she did it. But
well, that's how I've fallen in love with Maha strawberry strawberry jelly. It could be preserves, too, but this one, in this case, it was jelly. I'm a Maha fan. And I didn't realize that anybody ever combined it with anything. So you get to learn something new every year if you get out and pay attention to a few things. That's kind of fun. Yeah, one gently peeking out just makes people smile.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people in our audience will know who Alan Titmarsh is, and some people won't. But he is the he's the British television gardener person. I mean, he's really famous. I'm not putting him down at all. I'm inadequate to explain how many things he's done and how many awards he's won and how many, you know, this and that and the other thing. But that's what he said. One just gently peeking out makes people smile. This year, the Chelsea Flower Show has allowed for the first time in I don't know how many years garden gnomes to be included in the displays. They said in the name of a little bit of whimsy. Okay. And so Mr. Titmarsh says, oh, well, one just peeking out makes people smile. And it does. But I have to say, because designers are designers and you tell them they can have something they haven't been able to have, there's a lot of gnomes at Chelsea this year the photographs. But the best part, the very, very best part, and something hardly anybody's going to hear about except us here right now, there has been an auction through this process of the show for various charitable causes, and the gnomes have been among the things that are being auctioned off. Guess whose gnome got $5,000? Thank you very much. Sir Brian May's guitar-playing gnome.
Okay.
He from Queen, of course. So that one went for almost $5,000. That's a pretty good gnome, I'm telling you. But he decorated it himself. He didn't make the gnome, but he added the guitar. And that's what a great cause. We need to think about that sort of stuff. I would like to see gnomes with baseball bats to benefit something. You know what I mean? We can do this.
Baseball season, right.
See, we can do this. We can celebrate lots
Mr.
of
things. Titmarsh sounds kind of like the Jim Cantore of gardening, you know.
He's very much that all-over-the-place character.
The guy that's there makes it interesting, has cool things to say.
Yeah, and has a real good presence as well on video. So he's somebody that people have listened to for a very long time. His quotes are widely quoted. He doesn't have any. I've got a few quotes about the upcoming hurricane season, but I don't think you want to hear them. Mine are, okay, what's in the closet? You know what I mean? Like, how many things have we stored over? Are you ready? And we're coming into June, folks. We're coming into the beginning of the season. I know that our meteorologist, Lance, has been finding out all about all of that because the new reports are out.
Oh, yeah. It's always fun. Hurricane season, it... You know, they always have that same origination, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Kind of watch the valley they come through and then hope they don't come our way. And
we have to, we're hoping for a very strong Florida barrier.
Yes.
They all go up the East Coast.
Exactly.
Sorry about that, y'all.
Lately we've had, it's been
working. That's why I worry about this year.
50-50 lately. So.
Yeah, that's why we worry about this year. I was trying to think the other day with the first one. I can remember Betsy. That's how long ago the first one was. But I do remember being told about others, and they're never good stories. They don't ever tell you about the years that nothing happened. We only tell you about the ones when it was tough and there were problems. So we'll continue to talk about all of that, of course. Today, also in the photographs, you'll be seeing some beautiful, beautiful things, coleus and impatiens and one thing and another. But you're also going to see a really raucous and bad picture of a hydrangea that probably looks like the ones at your house. Leaf spot. Cercospora, but you don't even need to know that name because all it is the leaf spots that form, and they look like somebody took the rusty iron and made dots all over your plants. Well, unfortunately, that is the result of a wet spring, and it gives us the opportunity at that time, of course, to be doing other stuff, and that is to say, they'll go ahead and they'll bloom, you know, we'll do everything that we need it to do. But you do have to be aware that taking the flowers off is not the end of the process. So give yourself the opportunity to take the flowers off, enjoy them, dry them if you want to, and then you can spray the plant now to slow down the progress of the disease. But as we move into drier times, it's going to slow down anyway. So when the leaves fall off, which they will do, get them out of the garden, don't compost them, and put on your calendar next spring to begin spraying with a fungicide as soon as those leaves emerge. It's really just an inoculation of protection against what's probably going to be, wet spring is pretty common with us. So give yourself that opportunity to see what you got. Yeah, we're looking at some baseball stuff. You're going to handle all that.
Oh, yeah. I just let it go. It's 1 a.m. I was awake cussing and shouting at the same time. Going, I'll never watch baseball again. And then you win the game.
Yeah, that's how it goes.
Especially watching the Rebels. I mean, goodness gracious.
Y'all are having a few palpitations.
It's just constant, man.
I only looked at the box scores. It felt like that.
I mean, when you strike out 17 or 18 times in a game, you know, and I know it was extra innings. It was like, but they were at like 15.
It still feels bad.
But no, they were like 15 at ninth inning, you know, and you're going, oh my God. You know, so it was just one of those. And then they ended up winning it, you know. But there
14
was
innings,
goodness gracious. Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of upsets yesterday, too. You always, you know, Southern Miss got upset hosting at home and played the early game, hoping that that would all make sense and work out, and ended up losing it in the ninth. I think they may have gone to extra innings, too. Yeah. But I think it was the 11th in which they lost theirs. But there was a lot of upsets, and then some good teams had to come back. You know, it's kind of like gardening, right? You think something's done.
It's not.
And then, you see a little sprout of hope, and then boom. And there were a few of those yesterday, too, where, you know, the good teams were getting beat and then came back and won it.
Persistence is one of those qualities that I don't know if we admire enough. But if you play baseball, you pretty much have to have that. Goodness. So I guess it's even more if you coach it. You have to really teach persistence, and that's such a hard thing to do because it's not always rewarded.
Well, you are in charge of all those failures, and there's lots of them. Because in hitting, you know, you're successful 30-35% of the time. Yeah. In college, you're really good. If you had that kind of success rate in the garden, you'd quit.
Well, most people would,
Most people get
or
very
discouraged. Grow one thing, you know.
Right. I mean, so with a coach, I do think it's a lot like you have to have a lot of patience, and you kind of have to sit back and see the 30,000-foot view. As much
it's
as you
true.
Care about
so
each and
true.
Every each and everything that you're working with, you still have to have a bigger picture, because you can get enmeshed and enthralled with the day to day, and that's a bad thing. You've got to see a bigger picture.
You're exactly right. It doesn't make it any easier to go through it, but there is something about pulling out and seeing that wider view that can make things that are very difficult at least tolerable.
Yeah, things that you don't
around
understand.
Around the eighth inning, when it's I was listening to this, the guy who's putting on this thing on the White House lawn, you know, the head of the UFC thing, and he said, well, really, the only problem that we have would be lightning. And I thought, oh, no, don't say that out loud.
You're asking for it.
That's exactly how it happens at a baseball game. Somebody will go, we can keep playing. Lost is no lightning. Kaboom. You know, the next thing you know, you're off the field.
Well, you know it is, but you're a baseball fan, because at the moment somebody's throwing a no-hitter and they go, the guy's got a no-hitter, and boom.
Don't do that. Exactly.
This happens all the time.
Makes all of us crazy.
Hopefully we can stay away from the lightning today, and all of a sudden you've got an hour and a half delay.
Unfortunately, that's. You know, too often that's how it works out.
I mean, Perez was up here to like 1:30 last night. I mean, you thought
goodness.
The game was going to be over by about 11.
Sure.
No.
14
just,
innings
yeah,
in
going.
Arizona.
That's
thank
the way
you
it works. So, yeah, in Nebraska.
Nebraska, yeah, that's even worse.
I was hoping there wasn't going to be some type of inclement weather or anything as well, rolling through the plains. But we got lucky last night. So
today is Crocodile Day. We have talked about the fossil world a lot in this world, in this program, because I find those discoveries so fascinating, and so many of them tell us about the way our plants and animals have grown, evolved, and changed over time. But I just think this is great. Did you have any idea, and I certainly did not, that the Seychelles Islands were once considered the home for crocodiles? And
no idea about that.
They disappeared. So for years, the remains that have been in field museums, you know, those kind of places where they collect fossils and stuff, they just looked at them and said, okay, well, they're not there anymore. We'll move on and look at something else. What they have discovered, though, is that they were not, in fact, a unique species. They were an isolated population of the saltwater crocodiles that probably just drifted from the Indian Ocean. And when I read this, I was listening to it on audio, and I thought to myself, well, they just got they got drifted over there, and they went, well, we're not going to try and drift back, we're going to stay here. You know, it's not quite the same as my relatives from Ireland realizing they had to leave Ireland and deciding to come to the United States. They didn't have a whole lot more control, though, than these crocodiles probably did. So they got the population there, but the researchers, both from Germany and from the Seychelles, worked on this whole thing trying to figure it all out. And, of course, it comes down to DNA. And that's where they have eventually been able to find out that it was the rare samples that vanished 200 years ago. Isn't that fun?
Well, I love the way they also always say that the Seychelles is East African. You're like, right, okay. I mean, it's out in the middle of the ocean, and it's a little grouping of...
But because it broke off, that's how it's that's how it is labeled.
But I'm sure it's a beautiful, absolutely beautiful and diverse place with wildlife, given where it's juxtaposed on the planet. Yeah. I mean, you got, what is it, Madagascar would be down there, and then Sri Lanka and all that's going to be up northeast and Africa to the west. So the crocodile makes sense, but it doesn't sound like that would have been the original home.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah. They just, and they came from the other direction. They came from the Indian Ocean.
Yeah, yeah.
So interesting enough. Cool. Interestingly,
Indian
enough.
Ocean's big too.
Well, yeah. It, we don't think about these things. we don't. We don't. We're all geographically challenged. Let's face it. Human beings, we tend to look maybe a minute past our nose, but that's about. You know, we tend to be kind of close focused. So it's a, it's wonderful to be able to hear some of that, what they're looking at. You know. Oh, that's so sweet, Nathan. We'll send that note to him. You're very sweet. Ooh, he's been to Colorado and Utah this week. He said it was beautiful.
Yeah, I bet that was a good night. I mean, it's been pretty humid and steamy around here. Even with the rain, it's still 82 feels like 92 for some reason. Is it the same way south of here? Because I remember last year we had a pretty hot summer. You know? I mean, it was 195s. I mean, we're not even at summer yet, and I'm sitting out going, woohoo! This sun is bright.
We're in the 80s. Yeah. We're in the 80s, and it, that's if it's not pouring down rain, you know. But it's been very pleasant, other than the fact that it's been pouring down rain.
I've never noticed the tomatoes be so, I would say, weak. I mean,
watery.
They've grown. Yeah, they've grown so much, and then they wilt during the day, and then. They'll perk back up, and you know, I've just never. I have a lot of tomatoes.
They're struggling.
But yeah,
they're struggling. We have a whole lot of. Blossom end rot coming up because of the water that you talked about last week, because the water's here and then the water's gone and then it's too wet and then it's too dry. And it's been very difficult for the tomatoes. I pulled all of mine. We had fried green tomatoes here the other night, and I've got some that are ripening, but the hornworms got ahead of me in the rain. I had plucked off about a jar full, and two more days of rain, next thing you know, there they are again. It's a big deal, but I didn't feel like fooling with them, so I like fried green tomatoes. It works out just fine. Y'all know who this is, y'all? I'm going to tell you. It's the Hollies. Stick around.
Wind and rain and shine. That umbrella we employed it. By August she was mine. Every morning I would see her waiting at the stop. Sometimes she'd shop and she would show me what she bought. All the people stared as if we were both quite insane. Someday my name and hers are going to be the same.
Here's Sammy the Shovel here to tell you to call before you dig.
A lot of homeowners are working hard to create a loving home. Whether it's expanding that crowded deck, maybe a swimming pool, good times start with these additions, and that's why we respectfully ask you to first call 811 and have your utilities properly marked before you dig. It saves you from injury and expense, it's the law, and it's just the right thing to do. So call 811 before you dig. Remember us for your next project. Just call 811.
State Treasurer David McRae has returned more unclaimed money and delivered more college and career savings to Mississippians than ever before. He's done it by making the state's education savings programs more flexible, benefiting students and teachers at virtually all schools, private or public, vocational or technical. He's making college and career savings and getting unclaimed money easier than ever. Don't let another day go by without claiming your cash or jumpstarting a career. Treasury.ms.gov.
Kathy and Greg have, they've got a bee beard. Now, for those of you who think that I'm talking about the people who put the bees on their face and wear them as beards. I'm not. That's not what Kathy and Greg are doing, I promise. It would be pretty interesting to watch, but that's not what they're doing. That's one of those things. There's some things, bee beard contests and how much mustache wax can you put on your face and those kind of things. I'm fascinated by that, but I don't really want to get too close, you know. It's not my thing particularly. But this, on the other hand, is wonderful. They're forming a second swarm, sometimes called a bee beard, as she says, in our front yard in Vaughan. Next to the new swarm, they're swarming around an old decaying part of a cedar tree. They're looking for another place to check in, I think. We've left them alone, hoping they'll pollinate our garden, but we don't know much about bees. Are these honeybees? Do they pollinate vegetables and so forth and so on? Chances that they might be honeybees, but because we have a couple of dozen native to Mississippi, different kinds of bees, I'm sending you an article that has a bunch of different ones in very close-up pictures that might help determine who it is. But bees, generally speaking, form what's called the beard on the front of their hive or on the front of where the family is, you know, they're inside, because they're trying to make better ventilation inside of the hive, inside of the nest, okay? So it's very classic. The temperature and humidity within the hive have to be a particular, very specific, you know, 90 to 97 degrees Fahrenheit to form properly. But if it gets much higher or if it falls a whole lot lower, they can't, it doesn't work. And there's got to be enough ambient humidity for all of it to become honey. So it's a practice that the beard itself is part of the practice of making honey. And they might be moving another queen to the cedar tree. They might not. The chances are because most all of the, well, all of the bees, in fact, have some sort of nectar connection, that there is a pollinator effect from virtually everyone that there is. Even the solitary bees will do some pollination because they've got to eat. So check out the article that I sent to you about the different ones that there are. Ooh, look how pretty.
I had a house full of bees once.
I did too. We were not together at that time.
Had it like a three-story kind of wooden, very kind of lodgy structure.
Yep, wooden house.
Yeah, and the bottom had the driveway kind of came off of, and the carport. There was a porch above it, so there was about a foot and a half area that had space in between it. You know, wood rafters, all that good stuff. And when I bought the home, probably within a couple months, I could hear a humming.
Yeah, the wall was buzzing.
Buddy,
yeah.
Let me tell you, once they figured out that was their home. Thousands upon thousands came from all over, and I had a bee expert come out. He was so informative. He taught me an awful lot about how far they actually go, and you know, it was very far. You know, way out there.
The different species, some of them are closer to home, but most of them go 4 or 5 miles routinely. Mm-hmm. You know,
just be in and out, and thousands upon thousands, and that hum and became so loud. Eventually, we had to. We could not save the hive, which broke my heart because it was something I tried very hard to do. Mm-hmm. But you know, had to finally have a extermination come in and help me out a little bit. But we're able to kind of get a lot of them to get out of the area first. So, just could not save that hive piece, which I always wanted to see what it actually looked like because it was so. You know, it would have to have been extremely complex with that many in and out of it all the time.
Oh, sure. Well, this was this in a my experience was in a cypress house in South Louisiana that was built by family members who came from Northern Europe, and so they thought this was paradise and did not have any insulation or even two walls anywhere.
They were plenty warm.
They were fine, you know. They like, this was great. So when the bees got into the wall, it was, as you say, between where the wall is and then the space underneath it where it connects to the other part of the house. So they were in the wall, but it was because they had accessed it that way. And the wall buzzed, and there were a couple of bees in the house, you know. That's interesting. Fortunately, we knew some beekeepers, and these two delightful women came out in their suits with their smoking gun and their whole thing. They rolled up a hive, they smoked them so they would all get a little bit quiet, and then they were able to locate the queen, put her in the hive, and the bees marched in military fashion. It was one of the prettiest parades I've ever seen in my life. And I've seen
a
lot of
jazz parade, New Orleans.
Perfect. It was just perfect. They form an edge, and then they all filter in, and it gets smaller and smaller as they get to the door of the hive, so that everybody can filter in appropriately.
How cool is that?
It was wonderful to watch. It's one of those things that Nowadays, I'm sure there's a million videos of it out there, but this one's only in my head. It's still there.
Being there in person makes
it was so impressive.
Such a big difference to see it personally.
But it is hard to rescue them out of houses. Apparently.
Well, I would have had to basically deconstructed part of the home to do that. And we did get a lot of them out. It was thousands upon thousands. I don't know what we were able to do inside, but it was funny you say, they showed up in the white outfits and everything. This dude was such an old-timer and pro. He just came with a smoker and a light. He came at night. He goes, I'm going to come at night, and I'm going to get up. And he didn't bother him one bit as those bees get all over him. I think he was immune to it at some point.
A lot of people are able to tolerate that without even blinking.
We have a big bee farm at the hunting camp. Not ours, but next to us. Mm-hmm. And it's always fun. As the years have passed, they've gotten so much more, I wouldn't say organized, but you can tell that they're doing fairly well with the businesses itself goes, because you went from just kind of flatbed trucks and stuff that looked like it came off of junkyards, and to now, I mean, they've got these beautiful trucks and flatbeds out there and the full white gear. And
if it does well, that's how you
it's grown so much over the years. I'd say they've probably been doing it probably 20 years now, but in the last decade it looks like they hit critical mass. And I know down in your neck of the woods, that's the bee farms are a little more prevalent than what we have up here.
I think there's more people every year deciding to put a couple of hives in the backyard. I mean, and that's really all it takes to keep the population up. We've just learned over time that it is essential that we keep the pollinators, we keep hosting them in a way that makes sense for them. And in many cases, that can be a beehive as opposed to an old tree. But I got to tell you, Kathy, that's perfect. If they'll make their hive in your old tree, that's brilliant. That's wonderful. They'll be there and they'll be able to get to everything else that they're looking for. So that's great. Have you ever thought about this? We ran the story last week, talked about the development of Tyrannosaurus rex's short arms having to do with the power of the head to be the predator, the hunter part. In other words, you didn't need your arms if you could just run up and bash everything, which is apparently what they could do. This crocodile thread continues. And the other story was the something I can't pronounce in German, I apologize, but Naturwissenschaften, and it was part of the work that they did with the folks in the Seychelles. But they're talking about the bizarre crocodile relative. This is the crocodile cousin that they've also found. This, however, is a whole different world. This is a dinosaur. If they put this in Jurassic Park, we would all laugh. But it is an actual fossil, a bizarre crocodile relative that looked more like an ostrich. It actually did hunting. It walked on two legs, had those tiny arms that we've talked about because it didn't need them anymore is the idea, and sported a toothless beak. Toothless crocodiles? But apparently it was extremely efficient because it had such a long beak. It didn't have to use those hands. Isn't that crazy? You can understand, or at least I feel like I can understand why things did not continue evolving in that direction.
Well, and they were obviously not very bored either.
Yes, exactly, because you'd have banged into something.
You would have developed some hands and some long arms if you were. I think that's probably part of it. Like you're saying, that as you develop, you use what you need to survive, and they obviously were extremely busy.
Crazy.
They weren't crocheting.
No, they were out there trying to find something to eat. So, but it's just interesting to me that we've not considered that crocodiles would have ever walked on two legs, except perhaps in some fictional accounts, like the
a little spooky.
Well, the alligators that took the credit cards in New York and lived in the sewers and then moved to Florida. That's a wonderful book for children, but it's really not very realistic. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be the thing.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to watch crocodile stand up one day. I'm around alligators enough. I mean, the fact that they have to stay on all fours and kind of waddle through makes
probably our only advantage.
Yeah, it makes me feel a little better about myself.
Because if they get me, I'm in trouble. Oh, Randy says, yeah, it does. That's a beekeeper's eye there.
Oh man, goodness gracious!
You have an interesting thread, Randy. That's really interesting. But I do hope you're getting some help with that. Goodness gracious. And we've got, I love that. Nobody would come and remove this other hive from Bubba.
Yeah, that's Bubba tough. Had the same issue exactly mm-hmm. that I had.
Mm-hmm. In the wall, yeah. Mm-hmm. Beautiful pink canna, by the way, at supertalk.tv. You don't see as many pink cannas as you do orange and yellow, but it is a popular plant because bringing that color in does help. If there was a blue one, it would be even more popular because it would be more unusual. But cannas themselves, of course, can grow in deep shade the same way as cast iron plant or, you know, some other thing that you just put it there and don't care if it blooms. Some people will use hostas that way. So hostas will bloom, but they don't bloom as well if it's complete shade as they will if there's a little bit of dappled light in there. So you see people choosing things for color, but also for their structure. I went past a row of my favorite canna, which is the actual canna indica, the native canna that has just a very tightly wound red flower on it. And I thought, you know, that's so pretty. That's a nice spike. But I do like the fancy flowers now. I'm not going to say don't grow cannas by any means, but don't overlook the old ones either.
Well, there's another layer to that photo. And if folks are watching Super Talk on the video stream, that is a beautiful patio, too. You got the mm-hmm, outdoor mm-hmm. chiminea.
That's
lovely. That's a whole furnace.
Oh, yeah.
I love sitting outside.
I'm pretty sure that's a pizza oven.
That's pro done.
It's seriously it, pro man. Over there.
Keep it coming.
And I like Thank that. You. That's fun.
It
you
is
know?
Awesome.
We're having some weather that you can actually get outside and do some stuff.
Well, when you're talking about indica, they better not put that on any of these plants. You know, if they're selling, you may have some hippies showing up trying to smoke cannas all of a sudden.
Oh, I hope not. I don't think that would be a very good idea.
No.
Don't think that would be a very good idea. Ooh, that's really unusual. We're looking at people sending their hives in now.
I know. We have a lot of folks that have had bee experiences.
I mean, and tell you what, the bees are homing. They're going to find a place to make their home. And it can be in a tree, it can be in a rock, it can be, you know, anywhere they can get in and make a space. And that's just cool. Coming up this week, by the way, y'all, is Garden Wildlife Week. So if you're running into the various and sundry forms of wildlife, whether it's my tomato hornworms or your bees, trust me, this is the week we all appreciate them for good reason. There's no question but that this is the time when we start seeing all of them. I used to not ever play that sometimes you're the windshield, sometimes you're the bug tune until June because of that. But this year the bugs all came out as soon as the rain stopped, so we have to pay attention and have them up all over the place. It is also a thing that you need to consider. This is the time when everything can literally erupt so much more quickly. You might look and say, oh, that looks like it's a mealybug, you know, on my canna or on some plant, you know, that I've got here in the garden. I'll do something about that later. And you come back 3 or 4 days later and there's a mass of that particular pest. So that's why I tell you, when you see the pest at the first point, get it off the plant. You may use a little rubbing alcohol on a paintbrush. You may use your fingertips. You know, I know one year when I had more stink bugs than the law allowed, I paid my children to pluck them off of the plants. That went well for them, but it didn't. It slowed the stink bugs down enough that I could harvest the tomatoes. But let's just say that they were still around even after all of that. But this is that time. I think garden wildlife is one of those wonderful phrases. You know, it might mean bluebirds, but it might also mean stink bugs. They're all the wildlife in our place. That's for sure. That is for sure. Got a lot of beekeepers in the audience, I'm happy to tell you.
I love it, yeah.
That's fun stuff.
Termite swarms were a big problem around central Mississippi a couple weeks ago.
Yep, they sure have been everywhere. It's a good year for them, unfortunately. You would hope that the rain would slow them down, but it doesn't. And it's just something you have to watch out for. If you've got them, you need to know it, you know. Speaking of things in the neuroscience department, there is some new research about CBD slowing down your Alzheimer's risk. It calms the brain's immune system. I need somebody to tell me more about that. Interesting. Well, now you're riding in a car, sitting on the side of an old truck, heading up the road. It's probably raining. And Janis Joplin's going to sing to you. We'll be right back.
Lord, Jake Mangum, professional baseball player. A great team only gets better over time, just like auto insurance for Farm Bureau, where customers have seen two rate reductions in the past 12 months. And after February 15th, 2026, customers will see another rate reduction of 5%. That's the kind of consistency that gets you to the big leagues. Visit MSFBINS.com to contact a local agent and find great rates today. It's time to go with the home team. It's time to go with Farm Bureau.
Hello, I'm Sean Tindall, Commissioner of the Mississippi Department of Public Safety. Since 2021, Mississippi has seen a 25% reduction in fatalities involving crashes with commercial motor vehicles. Many of those crashes could have been avoided. DPS, through its MHP's Motor Carrier Unit and the Commercial Transportation Enforcement Division, is partnering with Big Rig Truckers to conduct safety checks across our state for the Trooper and Trucker Safety Initiative. The Department of Public Safety and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration are working together to keep our highways safe for everyone. Thank you, and drive safely.
Nowadays,
if we could all just learn to play the piano, wouldn't the world be a better place? Write poetry and play piano. That would be two things. The whole world would be a better place if we could all do that. I'm sorry, y'all. My headphones are pulling things into my face. I apologize. People watch me and they write me notes later and they say, "What were you doing? And why are your glasses and so looking so weird?" Because I can't. Because I need my eyes fixed. That's why. The American Chemical Society. Y'all know how much I love them. They've always got something to tell us. They are developing a futuristic alternative to LASIK surgery.
Chemical Society, you know.
Here we go now. That does not. There's no lasers and there's no incisions. They will use mild electrical pulses and platinum contact lenses. Something tells me I can't afford this. They temporarily soften the cornea so it can be molded into a new shape. The question is, would you do this? I would be signing up for the research project today if I could. All right. I mean, there's no doubt about that. The early tests, which are not done on people yet, have successfully corrected nearsightedness in about a minute without any other, and just like the eye is fine. Wouldn't that be wonderful? If they could have done that for me when I was 7, you know, just didn't ever get more nearsighted. How cool is that? Ooh, that's a beautiful picture. These are some Nicotianas. These are some ornamental tobaccos. See, Nicotiana, hear that word? It comes from that particular family of plants. That looks great. They're lovely. I like how they have such nice long tubes and pretty flowers. They're kinetic. When the breeze blows, those flowers are just all over the place. Which is very, very cool. Have you been hearing this? And I know, you know, Lance pays attention to this stuff. I got to tell you, I'm more interested in how many different ways I can cook squash at this point. But there's a new emphasis everywhere on eating protein and having more of it, you know, in our more different ways to get protein in our diets. We can talk about meats and beans and all of those things. But why is this so important? Why is everybody paying attention to it? Well, it goes back to gardening. It takes guts. That's exactly what this is. The Institute for, I love this, basic science. Just straightforward basic science. What a great idea. When the body runs low on protein, the gut sends powerful signals to the brain that changes what you crave. You're not as likely to be craving chocolate ice cream if you're having a protein craving. And it pushes humans and animals and everybody else to seek those essential amino acids, which are what we're looking for, instead of the sugars. We all hope for that. Researchers say that this newly discovered gut-brain network could transform our understanding of appetite. Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of things can transform if we understand what's pushing us. But that whole notion, there are still people who write articles every month or so that this is crazy, that your gut's not connected to your brain. It's like, what do you think it's connected to? You know, it's everything's
hip bone and the knee bone.
Everything's connected, you know. We're only one being. So it's just an interesting way to look at it and to... I have a feeling it fits into some of this, some of the weight loss drugs that are stimulating particular hormones and also depressing your appetite so that you have a craving for, say, protein instead of sugar. Yeah. I mean, those things make a lot of sense, and I think that's what they're doing.
It's got to be a connection to the brain, though. You're right.
Of course there does.
We have a question, and Willie from West Point, the football capital of the whole world, in my opinion. And Willie had a question for you. He wanted to. Yeah, that's the truth, isn't it, Willie? I mean, you guys in West Point are waking up right
I'm
now
not
because
gonna
spring
argue.
Training's on. Yeah, football's cracking.
I'm not going to argue. Good morning. Good morning.
It's raining up here.
Oh.
Good morning, ma'am. How you doing?
Doing good. Thanks for calling.
Yes, ma'am. I have an issue with black and red grasshoppers. I haven't seen any adults. All I've seen is the about 1-inch long ones.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What are they? Are they eating something?
Ma'am.
Are they eating something?
I haven't seen them on it. I haven't seen them on anything. Just crawling on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, they'll eat turf. They'll eat almost anything they come in contact with. What are you using to control them?
My foot.
Okay. I was going to say that's probably the best approach. I always have this vision because I saw it happen one time. Somebody trying to kill grasshoppers with a spray, and they were chasing them around. The grasshoppers ended up chasing them around. You know what I mean? It just doesn't work. So if you can physically control them, and if you can cover the plants that they might be eating, that helps. But they're really a temporary problem. They can do some devastation, but it doesn't last but a few weeks.
Okay, well, all I got is peppers, tomatoes, and basil, and squash, and then I don't need anything.
Well, if you see them, head for them, go ahead and cover the plants up, because then they can't get to them. But they're really a temporary problem that can create great panic at times.
Uh-huh. Yes, ma'am. Okay, lady, you have a blessed
weekend. Thank you. Take care of yourself. We'll be looking forward to that. Oh, my goodness, I can't believe it's already time to start practicing for football. But, of course, it is.
Yeah, I think West Point basically just practices putting on, you know, championship rings. That's like spring training for them most of the time. So
I love that.
Yeah,
that's great.
They're such a fun program to cover, and their fans are great. Doing the football show on Friday nights is always a treat. And we have quite a few of our West Point folks tune in to our shows on a daily basis. So thank you, guys. Greatly appreciated.
Very much, very much. What a sweet place, too. From Lamar County, Mike and Nancy just sent us a bunch of really cool pictures of their garden. They're beautiful.
Get those over there.
That hibiscus is so and gardenias, pretty. Some canna, some Asiatic lilies. They got a little of everything, and she says the rain has been great.
Looks like it.
Hadn't had to water anything, that's for sure. But some of the flowers are truly huge, and you know that that's from the rain. One flower that you will see also at supertalk.tv that I saw pass by a minute ago is a blue butterfly plant. It is a Rothica. Now, it's in the clerodendron group. It was known as a clerodendron for a long time. I think of these as the plants that got married a couple of times, okay? Because when women change their names, as we do, you don't know who they are the next time you hear about them. I have people that still don't know who I am because they know another name that I wrote under before I wrote under Nellie Neal. Excuse me. So it's interesting that we have to figure those things out sometimes. But, you know, we manage. Somebody needs to tell me the difference between a macaroon and a macaron. I know it's two different things, but they have such close names that this is, we're coming up tomorrow will be National Macaroon Day. I don't care for them, but there's another word, macaron, which is a different treat, apparently. Interesting.
He's the French president, right?
I think he was, yes, I believe so. Ooh, somebody's got some pretty zinnias today. That's a nice one. Someone asked me about the different kinds of zinnia flowers, and the ones that you'd think of traditionally that you might see a few yellow center in, but it's mostly the center is very small. Those are dahlia-shaped, dahlia flowers, because they look like dahlias, but they're not. They're zinnias, but that shape of a flower. The other ones, of course, that have really pointy, the petals are rolled up and they point. Those would be the cactus type because they look more like a cactus flower.
Jesse called while we were in break, and he did not want to get on air, but he wanted me to tell you hello and loves listening to you out in Raymond. And he sent this picture here of his trumpet roses. And
oh, fun.
Wanted to make sure we could see them, and they look beautiful as well. So
wonderful.
Thank you,
wonderful.
Jesse.
Thanks, Jesse. Good to hear from you. I don't know whose coreopsis these are, but they're gorgeous, too.
Isn't that? I want just, my whole yard just, to look like that.
Just turn up and bloom one day, you know. Yeah. It's really nice, really pretty.
No mowing with nothing but beautiful flowers.
That's it.
Yes,
that's
ma'am.
It. Why not?
Amen.
If only.
I love my yard, too, but, you know, the grass, but that's a different view right there.
There is some work. There is some work. My goodness. You know, somebody asked me the last time we played this, who was that? His name is John Hartford. If you don't know about him, look him up. We'll be back.
Morning, we shall meet them over on the Hallelujah Show. Get in touch with God. Turn your radio.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
And listen to the music in the air. Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Heaven's glory share, glory share.
Turn the lights down low.
Turn your lights down low.
And listen to the Master's radio.
Get in touch with God.
Get in touch with God.
Turn your radio on. Turn your radio on.
Here's Sammy the Shovel here to tell you to call before you dig.
A lot of homeowners are working hard to create a loving home. Whether it's expanding that crowded deck, maybe a swimming pool, good times start with these additions. And that's why we respectfully ask you to first call 811 and have your utilities properly marked before you dig. It saves you from injury and expense. It's the law, and it's just the right thing to do. So call 811 before you dig. Remember us for your next project. Just call 811.
You smell that? Spring. Hibernation's over. It's time to run it. Run it until the grass becomes long and the hedges duck and cover. Then, run it again. Steel, get up to $50 off select AK battery tool sets. Offer valid for limited time only at participating dealers while supplies last.
For a flipping good time. At done pruning them by mid-July. This is the time if, for example, you've got some areas in the shrub that are not that good and you're trying to encourage them to grow, you'll want to prune the parts around it as well as that part to get some new growth popping out. But it's also true that if you're trying to get it to grow bigger, you also want to take the flowers off, give it some fertilizer, and let it go ahead and make it into a more of a plant that you can appreciate, something that you might enjoy. And it will have more flowers, too, of course, if it's a larger size. It depends on what kind of hydrangea it is as to what sort of pruning you actually do to it. But if we can get away with it on French hydrangeas, on big leaves, we're just going to take the flowers off and maybe the first cluster of leaves right below that flower head. That's what is the best for the plant. We do have oftentimes a smaller set of flowers, but it's just different. There's also a really good thing to know, something you may or may not have heard anybody talk about, in terms of the paniculatas. We think of them limelight, you know, they bloom later on, they function just differently. They're cone-shaped, they're pointed. The limelights, if there's several different varieties or several different cultivars, of course, of limelight, some are small, some are big, but when they bloom on their new growth. So you prune them back in late winter to stimulate that new growth so then they can bloom in the summer. It's another reason why they bloom later than the French hydrangeas, because they're blooming on growth that they have just put on that year, whereas the round-headed or the French hydrangeas are blooming on growth that they produced the summer before. So just so you know, oak leaf hydrangeas need even really less pruning than the others. We don't prune any of the hydrangeas unless they need it, but it deserves a little bit of attention. If you're growing it in shade, of course, which is where they do the best and where they thrive, you may want to have a little bit of prune them after they flower, but not too much. They're not one that needs very much pruning, and really the ripening or the maturing of their flowers is, to me, one of my favorite things. So give yourself a chance to enjoy your hydrangeas and give them some time to produce and also some time to get pruned. Mary sent beautiful pictures. Her cereus is blooming. Looks like she's already got 5 or 6 blooms already here. And that's just one of those big plants that does such a beautiful job. She's the same person who had Roma tomatoes from a volunteer plant. So we know Mary's a good gardener. That's fun. Chris has bagworms. Okay. anywhere you're finding webs of plants, these are actually webworms, webs around plant leaves and whatnot, as he's finding on this particular apple tree, you cut those off and then keep an eye out. You don't want to leave those things in the garden because they are full of insects. But that's a protection that the insect will create, that home, so that they cannot easily be either eaten by something else like a bird or sprayed by you or anything else. So the physical removal is, again, the most practical way to get rid of them. They're not usually a long-term problem. But it is a good, it's an interesting collection of bugs, I'll say that. That's really interesting. Very cool. Very, very cool. We're going to talk about summer lawn care this year, coming up in a couple of weeks. We're going to talk about the things that you want to redo when we get into July. Of course, a lot of people are thinking about cutting things back and replanting. How do you make those decisions? Those things are all on my agenda for the summer. If you were not with us in the first hour, I'm sorry that I'm not going to go back over it, but trust me, it's a big day for crocodiles. We didn't really, the Seychelles or lost crocodiles have now been understood and figured out. We now have some pretty crazy fossils to think about, too. We're back on that whole business of why did dinosaurs have short arms, you know. Interesting, but that's another thing you might want to be interested in. I've got something that I'm particularly fascinated by. You don't think about this. You don't think about birds evolving, growing in their growth patterns, and really dramatically change who they are and what they're doing. But in this case, the University of Birmingham in England is letting us know that the tiniest of the Scottish wrens, which is a very pretty bird, by the way, kind of brown, but pretty cute, they're evolving into giant island birds. Now, the difference between giant and giant is relative in this particular case. But these tiny birds have been studying four isolated populations of them. They are, some of them weigh twice as much as the wrens on the mainland of the same species. So that is giant for a wren. It suggests that they are evolving independently, not only because of their size, but because their songs are different, and they actually have different appearances. Even though their genetics are the same, they're also seeing some genetic some genetic anomalies in the evolving birds that will probably turn them into an entirely different species very shortly. I think that's amazing that we're able to see this in real time. Now, they've been studying these populations for a period of time, and I really do appreciate that. But the St. Kilda wrens, wrens have names. I don't know, people must have been studying wrens for eternity because they have such interesting names. But in this particular case, it is the St. Kilda wrens that weigh twice as much. Really something. This is somebody after my own heart. If I see them early, I use neem oil for the early stages of bagworms, and it does work for webworms too, by the way. I understand they're trying to live their best life, but so am I. Yes, that's true. And they do mature very quickly. That's true. The bagworms will be the ones usually on a juniper, and they do look like a little bag, a little sleeve falling off of the branch. And that's definitely something you want to get rid of one way or another, because when they get tightly into their enclosures, it's very difficult to get anything to penetrate them. But in the idea that they're trying to live their best life, I really do appreciate that. And they are. But I'm with you. I would just assume they did it someplace else. I had someone ask me a couple of weeks ago about something I said about using blood meal to run fire ants out of your vegetable patch so that you could deal with them however you want to, but not put those chemicals into your food area. And she said, what is it that you pour out? It's blood meal. You dump that on top of them. Well, why isn't that a problem? Well, it's not a problem because it's a slaughterhouse byproduct that we use in the garden as a nitrogen source, because it's a case where it's something that occurs, it happens, it's natural, and it does need to be put to work one way or the other. So otherwise it becomes trash and you don't need that. So what we do need, of course, is for this to be able to be put to work and to work really as well as we hope it would. And I like that. I think that's terrific. So we are working on that. I have been thinking about, I had an interesting encounter this week with some yellow zucchini. Nobody knows what yellow zucchini are in the grocery store. They're squash as far as they're concerned. And yes, zucchini is a type of squash. but they're not summer squash. And it was actually, in this case, the price on the rack was a little bit higher than the price they charged me at the register because they put them in as yellow squash. And I said, I'm not trying to get you to take more of my money, but you might want to know that that's actually yellow zucchini. And this person looked at me as if I had three heads. So sometimes we gardeners just have to let it go and go on, move into the next thing and not worry about it because not everybody has the attention to detail that most of us have, that's for sure. Do you know anybody that keeps parrots for pests, for pets? I have to say, I knew a couple.
Andrew Jackson's would have been a pest, yeah.
I knew a couple bunts that had them, and they were pets to one and pests to the other, that's for sure. But it's interesting that tomorrow is World Parrot Day. I'm not sure what you're supposed to do. Are we supposed to, like, you know, we talk about the thing that people do when they parrot, they repeat everything that you say as you're saying it, and it's really irritating. Sometimes it's a natural behavior and something that people can't control. Other times it's an intentional way of being not so pleasant. But I don't know if we're supposed to do that or if we're supposed to go and admire lots of fancy plumage. I don't really know, but tomorrow is World Parrot Day.
And dress up like a parrot. You know,
maybe we could do that.
Drink a lot of rum.
Yeah, maybe that would be it. That would be it. Put on your tricorn hat.
Arr, matey, where's my bird?
All of that.
I mean, I can only imagine that when you're out on the ocean for months upon end and, you know, everybody's a dude, you're dealing with scurvy and all these things and, like, stale bread. It's probably nice to have a funny little guy on your shoulder, multicolored bird.
Wouldn't you think?
Yeah, you would kind of keep everybody off edge.
As long as no one's trying to take him away from me and make him lunch.
Unless somebody's trying to eat him, right?
It'd be a whole different thing. The University of Reading is telling us that cacti are evolving really fast. I don't know if I'm even interested in this, but it is an interesting topic, I'll grant you. It'd be something for research. What they're talking about, the key factor in how you can measure it and also in how fast they're changing is the nature of the flowers. So where there is warmer weather and less rain, the cacti don't change and don't evolve as fast. They're just basically trying to hold on. But where you've got the cool springs happening, as they did this year with a whole lot of rain, that's when they begin to be able to see different changes in the flowers, which indicates a change in the survivability of that cactus. I guess sometime, somewhere along the way, the 750 species are going to have to figure out how we're getting that, you know, how we get it to evolve to the next thing. And really, it does turn out to be both temperature as well as rainfall. It used to be that there was very little change evolving in deserts, and that has turned out not to be true at all once we've actually gotten in there and taken a good look. Pollinators and highly specialized flowers were the main thing. If there were, you know, they always thought that if there were fewer flowers or fewer pollinators, those two things would affect the development. It's the same way that they have done in tropical rainforests. In tropical rainforests, there are many fewer pollinators than there are things to be pollinated. So therefore, the flowers do evolve more ways to be attractive, stronger scents than the species in other places, those kind of things, as well as different colors to attract those critters. And it's, in fact, it's what's happening, they believe, among the cacti, which they didn't really think it was, but they have. The cacti follow a different pattern. They go about the how the flower changes is what makes the difference. Pretty interesting. I did not know that. I did not know that. I love that. Parrots on your bicycle, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they'd have to be entertaining, you know.
Well, people that love their parrots have great relationships with them. It's a difficult thing. I knew someone once who inherited a parrot from somebody who died, and it was a very unpleasant experience because the parrot was not happy. You know, you can't send the parrot for counseling.
No. I'd like to know who does that.
Have to kind of try and work it out, but it doesn't always happen the way you want it to.
Well, and when you're talking about a parakeet, I think they have, like, what, they can live to like 80 years. Live 10 or 15.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're in for a commitment. Yes. And you may not know that you are.
Well, and if you you may not, it may not be one of those things that you think about. You just think, well, when I'm gone, I'll give the parrot to, you know, Susie over here. And it turns out the parrot doesn't like Susie. You have to think about these things, you know. Let's see. This is on the deck with flowers, but there's the I love this. It's the pink milkweed plants are not blooming. They are big. They're growing very, very well, and they should be blooming pretty soon, if not immediately. I'm going to figure, Joe, that it is, if you have any fertilizer that has no nitrogen in it at all, you certainly could give that to them, something that is like 0.55 or 0 something. But if not, I'm just going to say give it a little time. We've had plenty of rain. That's why they're growing so well, but they just may not have been able to put on flowers yet. If you can give it a little fertilizer that doesn't have any nitrogen in it, I would do that too, to help stimulate them. But he's in Madison County. We should be seeing at least the beginnings of some flowers by now. And the stand is beautiful. The plants are just terrific. Just terrific. When we talk about how there's so many different milkweed species in Mississippi, I'm not going to tell you not to plant them, but there are a couple that seem to draw more pollinators, more of the nesting that we're hoping to get, you know. But it is one of those plants that is just beautiful and that we always hope to grow more of. Oh, this is lovely. We're getting to see some really pretty Stokes asters, and I'm going to say it's a swallowtail. I don't actually know what kind of butterfly it is, but we'll look it up and tell you in a minute.
Hawknose.
Yeah, it's pretty.
He chases them all.
Well, I was going to say he probably has a book.
Yeah, he's got his book on that.
He has his field guide.
He's keeping notes.
But I do love the blue flowers of Stokes asters. They're bluish purple. The pink ones are pretty too, but yeah, pink's a lot more common and easier to get into your garden than the blues and purples. And that's just a beautiful plant. Thank you for sending it.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you, you're banging it out today with the photos.
I'm telling
Thank you.
You. We need to be making the note cards or something.
Like
you
a
know,
coffee table book.
This beautiful, beautiful. So gorgeous. You ever hear of any, ever have anybody say, you know, I played that piano, but I didn't like it as well as this piano over here? And you think, well, I don't play piano, but I mean, what difference does it make? It makes a lot of difference. What they're finding out, they've proven that the pianist's touch actually reshapes the piano sound. People have been arguing about this for 100 years or more, about whether or not this can be true. Music teachers particularly are always trying to get their students, I speak from experience, they're always trying to get their students to form a better finger and better hand control so that the sound will be better, okay? Turns out that actually is true. Using a cutting-edge sensor system, I love this, they're tracking piano key movements at 1,000 frames per second. They discovered that elite pianists, that would be people that are way better than me, actually manipulate keys in ways that you can hear if you're a listener. If you're accustomed to listening to their music, you will hear the differences. I think you've always heard the difference. It's not just, for example, it's not just the difference between a Hammond B3 organ and a Fender Rhodes electric piano. Those are both keyboards, but they're very different. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the same keyboard being used by different people has a different sound to it because of the way that that person plays. It is, it's an amazing truth and something that I know people have argued about. Oh, my goodness. But I do like that we're able now to do some technology on it and actually see what's happening. Makes a lot of sense to me. Somebody asked me what I would do for a fall tomato. They're looking to order some seeds. I've kind of always said, make sure you're looking for something that either says hot or summer or heat, something in it. Solar set is a good one, but that's what you're looking for. Coming back after this break, we're going to be talking about the fondren process, the fondren whole business, the garden tour. It is bottle tree and garden tour. So we're going to tour some bottle trees and tour some gardens. Take a few more of your texts today and see what else we can, what kind of trouble we can get into. This is the Garden Mama Show. We'll be right back.
State Treasurer David McRae has returned more unclaimed money and delivered more college and career savings to Mississippians than ever before. He's done it by making the state's education savings programs more flexible, benefiting students and teachers at virtually all schools, private or public, vocational or technical. He's making college and career savings and getting unclaimed money easier than ever. Don't let another day go by without claiming your cash or jumpstarting a career. Treasury.ms.gov.
Nowadays, customers are searching online for the services they need.
Are they looking at your business?
Having a mobile-friendly website can really help you win new customers. Let SuperTalk Mississippi Media create a great-looking and very affordable website for your business. Plus, studies suggest that a well-written radio ad can lead to a 20% lift in traffic to your website. Just call SuperTalk Mississippi Media today at 601-991-2305 or go to stmmdigital.com. Nowadays,
listen to my bluebird laugh. She can't tell you why. Deep within her heart, you see, she knows all I cry. Just crying. Yeah.
Ah, the Fondren Bottle Tree Garden Tour. One of Jackson's very oldest neighborhoods, and one I'm happy to say I lived in for a very long time, is inviting everybody to come over Saturday, June the 6th, and take a look at art and plants and people and gardens and Fondren and have a good time and really, quite frankly, a bunch of other stuff that we're now going to talk to Kathy Boone about. Good morning, Kathy. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, good morning. Good morning to all your listeners. I'm just thrilled to be here to talk about the Fondren Bottle Tree and Garden Tour.
Thank you so very, very much. It is an event, of course, that is dear to my heart. I love the colors this year on the poster and T-shirts. That's another, you know, I'm always up for green, so that's beautiful. And I love seeing some of the gardens. You have sent some lovely pictures for folks that are at supertalk.tv. Go over there and check it out. This is just like the little teasers. There's going to be some gorgeous gardens as well as a lot of other things going on. Tell us about it, Kathy. Talk first about, I know it's next Saturday, but if people want to go, what do they need to do now?
Yeah, great. So it is next Saturday, June the 6th, and the garden tour runs from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. You can buy tickets online. They're only $10, so it's like, what a bargain. Mm-hmm. You can buy them online at FondrenGardenTour.com or right in front of the Trust Mark in Fondren, that's at Old Canton Road and Dooling Avenue. We're going to be out there selling tickets starting at 9 a.m. on Saturday.
Mm-hmm,
so you can
mm-hmm.
come by, get your ticket, and then grab a coffee at Just Vanilla Bakes or around the corner at the Bean, and then head out for your garden tour. There are 18 houses on the tour this year, and we have them arranged in kind of clusters. And we always get feedback that folks want to kind of get out of their cars and walk mm-hmm. around a little bit. So mm-hmm. we have several clusters where you can park and see three or four or five homes at one time. So that's just a great way to do it. You know, it's going to be warm, but we think it's going to be a beautiful day.
Yes. Yes. There's going to be a lovely day. We are putting all of our vibes into that, making sure that y'all get a good one for the tour. The good news it really is that Fondren has gardeners of every sort, every stripe, everything from, quite frankly, fancy, very well manicured landscape architect quality up there, things that are award winning designs, all the way to things that we might award designs to just because they produce a whole bunch of food or herbs or flowers or something else. So you've got a little bit of everything to show people. I think that's part of the joy of Fondren as a place to be and live, but also as a garden tour. You will not be bored
absolutely.
By these gardens.
Absolutely. And our plan was really not to make this a formal, fancy kind of tour. It's really to help, like, one gardener talk to another. Mm-hmm. For example, my house is on the tour, but I am a very amateur gardener, except for the things that were planted when I renovated my house, and they look really, really nice. And the things that I'm working on are still, you know, in evolution. But across the street from me, my mom is a fantastic gardener, and so she has this beautiful island that's also mm-hmm. on the tour mm-hmm. in her backyard that she's been working on for 40 years that she's lived in that house. So we really run the gamut, and you know, the homeowners are going to be there as well as some volunteers, just to tell you a little bit about what's happening in each garden and what the different owners trying to do. And it's just a really fun time to just get out and enjoy visiting with neighbors and to see some different yards and you know, hidden little hidden cubby holes of gardens, big formal ones, everything in between.
Well, when we started all of this with the notion about bottle trees, I know there were probably 20 or 30, and now I think estimates are over 100 physically bottle trees in the neighborhood. talk a little bit about that, because it's a great symbol. I remember when people used to, they would put up things, you know, there's guitars in Tupelo, you know, because of Elvis, and there was catfish in Greenwood, you know what I mean? But the bottle trees really are Fondren's symbol.
That's right. And we decided to kind of ground it in that bottle tree because it's got such an interesting, such a beautiful but an interesting kind of like cultural heritage. So, you know, the estimates are that the idea of bottle trees was brought over from West Africa by enslaved people because shiny objects were thought to attract evil spirits, and the color blue was especially powerful in doing that. So enslaved people brought that tradition, especially in the South, and started to put sticks up with bottles and things. The idea is that the evil spirit gets trapped in the bottle overnight, gets attracted to that shiny object, trapped in the bottle overnight, and then when the sun comes out in the morning, it vanishes. It destroys the evil spirit. So it was a way of reflecting their heritage as well as protecting their families and their traditions. And so as time evolved, you know, that we became more and more interested in, like, using these not just as a spiritual practice, but as a beautiful practice, and put together, you know, metal arrangements and bigger landscapes that would have these bottles. And blue at the time, sort of in the late 18th, early 19th century, blue bottles were medicine bottles, and so that's kind of where the color came from. And now people use colors of, you know, all kinds in their bottle trees, and, you know, you'll see them, they'll be marking each of the garden tours, but then all over the neighborhood you see them, and it's a great way to celebrate not just the beauty, but that rich and vibrant tradition, which is such a part of Fondren. You know, we call Funky Fondren. We have a lot of artists, a lot of different cultures and experiences, and we just welcome all of that into the Fondren neighborhood.
It really doesn't hurt to catch a few evil spirits too, in case it works. I would just assume they would be outside in the bottle. No problem there. You mentioned the artists. Talk to me about, I had told folks in the first hour that our friend of our show here, of course, from Pearl River Glass, that Andy's going to be doing some beautiful, I saw some pictures of his gorgeous steaks. But talk about the Artist Village and what y'all are doing with that this year.
Yeah, well, first of all, I wanted to mention that, you know, that image you see of the Fondren Bottle Tree and Garden Tour, that was created by one of our local artists, Dear Michelina, who owns the Vanilla Bakes. And so, you know,
by the way, you're talking, you happen to be talking to two of his biggest fans this morning.
I mean, listen,
Lance and I are crazy about Guillermo.
Yeah, you've not had the $1 million shortbread, you're just not doing enough.
Truly,
for yourself.
That's true. You deserve it. You should go have it.
He drew that image, and we've been using it. We're very grateful to him. But this year we're going to have a little artist village, and I'm excited. It's actually going to be in my front U-shaped driveway. So we've got, you know, ceramic artists. We've got painters. We've got watercolorists. We have a neighborhood fan who's an author of a children's book. She's going to have her book out there. We have a guy that makes bottle trees that are going to be for sale out there. So it's going to be like, six or eight little vendors just to come on by while you're touring some of the gardens and take a look. All folks that are, you know, Fondren or Fondren adjacent artists, and it's just a great way to celebrate that tradition that we have of loving and supporting the arts here in our neighborhood.
The first bottle tree that I ever saw was at a pharmacy in my childhood, and it was all blue milk of magnesia bottles. So yeah. I think about that. If you had a case of those right now, you would have a really magnificent bottle tree. But it is true that we pick up any colors that we can now, and some are more difficult to acquire than the others.
It is hard to find good blue bottles, but people are on the lookout for sure. Sapphire Gin, by the way, has a beautiful.
That's right. That's what I've been. I've seen those, and they're lovely. I didn't know what that product was, but the bottle's gorgeous. Some of the red bottles are hard to find, but they're all worth the search. And once you dive into that world, you'd be surprised how many people there are that are interested in the different bottles and the different colors. And that, you know, you start looking around, and all of a sudden you realize you're in a world. I will confess, my one little one left from the year that my garden was in the tour, I have Martinelli apple juice bottles on it. And you know, it's just different, but it's a way to enjoy being part of that community and understanding that really Fondren, as you say, keeping it funky and all those things that we've always said about Fondren is very true. I particularly want to point out there are not a lot of places where you're going to find somebody with a house they've renovated across the street from their mama who's a gardener for 40 years. Trust me, y'all, you want to go see this. Y'all don't know that I know who I'm talking to. I'm telling you, it's a great opportunity to see both the gardens and also to experience that kind of family and hominess that Fondren offers.
Absolutely. I mean, last year there were just so many people parked on our street because we have a big cluster there, and just people out with strollers and just enjoying the day. Mm-hmm. And and that's just a really fun thing to do. We want to get people out here, you know, and you can stop along the way. We have 30 places to eat and drink in Fondren, so we really want folks to come out and support our local businesses. We have a wonderful, vibrant, you know, little downtown center right around the corner market. You can just stop in at any time during the tour and enjoy. And we just welcome everybody. So really appreciate you helping us promote it.
Of course.
It.
Well, we're very happy to do that. There's always a reason why people put together an event like this. And I think that promoting Fondren is a very good reason for doing this. People don't know what they're moving into. A lot of times you move into a neighborhood and you don't know, you've just gotten a job in that city or something, you know, and the houses are interesting, but you're basically just looking for what you can afford, and it might not be particularly quaint or picturesque. And then somebody shows you a home in Fondren, and you go, "Well, I could live there," you know, because it is an older neighborhood. There's a lot of personality and a lot of character. It's not for everybody, but for those of us who love it, it is absolutely the best.
That's right. I feel the same way. I look out there sometimes, and when I'm walking my dog in the morning, there's six or eight different walkers on the same street, or Friday afternoon, Saturday. So. Yeah, that's what we're really trying to cultivate and let everybody know that this is a beautiful place to live. We have a lot of community to celebrate. We have a lot of fun things to do. And, you know, keeping everybody active and engaged in our neighborhood is really what makes it thrive.
Yep, you can meet some nice people, get involved in shopping for a few early gifts, perhaps, and at the same time, go have a nice lunch. It's a great place to be. This is the Fondren Bottle Tree and Garden Tour that we're talking about with Kathy Boone this morning. The 2026 version of this is next Saturday. It is June the 6th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Now, the tickets are $10, but at the same time, bring a 20 with you because you're going to want one of these T-shirts. These are beautiful. I mean, it's a gorgeous shirt always, but this particular color and the design is one that we've always enjoyed, and I think you'll want to do that too. Then, of course, you have all the way from 10 until 4 in the afternoon to see the gardens. And, go. You know, you can go walk and look at something and go over and buy something from the artists and at the same time take a bunch of pictures. We always feel like the best thing in the world you can do at someone else's garden is like it so much that you want to take a picture home and steal the idea. It's perfectly all right to do that.
That's right. Share the wealth.
Exactly. Thank you so much. I so appreciate it. I'm so glad to know that the art part's going to be in your driveway, because I was hoping that that's what was going to happen. But, you know, I'm not on the committee, so I can't help you plan all of those things. But the really good news is that no matter what garden you go to, you're going to find something you're going to enjoy. And the folks that come out to talk to you that live there or that garden there are in both cases are going to be people you want to meet. So I have just got so much excitement for y'all. I hope that it will be a wonderful, we're going to all go. No lightning, no thunderstorms, none of that. This is going to be a beautiful day for a garden tour, and I know y'all are going to enjoy it. Kathy Boone, tell me what your favorite plant is to grow.
You know, right now, I have to tell you, I am thrilled with my lantana. I mean, that is the one thing that I picked out, and I've got it right outside my kitchen window with a bird bath, and I'm going to tell you, it is a butterfly. It is bright, vibrant colors, and it is a butterfly bird mecca out there, and it is making me so happy every time I'm at my kitchen sink. And that is one thing that has been very resilient.
Because that's wonderful.
I'm not the best. I'm really not a great gardener, but it has really been. So y'all come out and see it. I'm going to tell you, I'm very, very proud of it.
Thank you, Kathy. Appreciate you being with us today. I have to tell you, lantana is one of my favorite things. It is one of those plants that once it gets happy, it's going to make you happy every year. For like decades.
Right.
Not all perennials are that good. They don't all have that reputation.
No.
But your lantana does. Thank you for sharing that with us. Thank you for being here with us today. And I look forward to everybody coming to see y'all next weekend.
Thank you so much.
Y'all thanks, Kathy. Fondren Bottle Tree and Garden Tour next Saturday. All right, folks, we'll be right back.
A time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to reap. A time to kill, a time to heal, a time to laugh, a time to weep. To everything, turn, turn, turn. There is a season, turn, turn, turn. And a time to every purpose under heaven. A time to build up, a time to break down, a time to dance, a time to mourn.
Hello, I'm Sean Tindall, Commissioner of the Mississippi Department of Public Safety. Since 2021, Mississippi has seen a 25% reduction in fatalities involving crashes with commercial motor vehicles. Many of those crashes could have been avoided. DPS, through its MHP's Motor Carrier Unit and the Commercial Transportation Enforcement Division, is partnering with Big Rig Truckers to conduct safety checks across our state for the Trooper and Trucker Safety Initiative. The Department of Public Safety and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration are working together to keep our highways safe for everyone. Thank you, and drive safely.
Here's Sammy the Shovel here to tell you to call before you dig.
A lot of homeowners are working hard to create a loving home. Whether it's expanding that crowded deck, maybe a swimming pool, good times start with these additions. And that's why we respectfully ask you to first call 811 and have your utilities properly marked before you dig. It saves you from injury and expense. It's the law, and it's just the right thing to do. So call 811 before you dig. Remember us for your next project. Just call 811.
Garden Mama here.
Hey, dig it up. What's your voodoo bag? Are you doing the procedure this way?
Be surprised how much French you know once you start thinking about it.
But you know all the words.
Pretty much. I know the ones not to play. But you do a real fine job. Thank you very much for that.
I do my best. That's one of my favorites, Pine Grove Blues, which is a Nathan Abshire song. But this is Dewey Balfa and Robert Hardell that are doing it. And it's like in that living room. It's got to be from the early 80s. It's amazing.
You know it is.
It is. It's great.
There's a the Zydeco Festival that's coming up, which is not the same as what we're just listening to, of course, but the idea of recording in the living room is a real big deal in that part, in that world. You'll read stories about people that had to put the accordion out in the hall because it was too loud for the equipment that they had in the room where they were recording, you know, those kind of things. sometimes the accordion dominates more than even they wanted it to.
Yeah. I love the backyard ones, too. And it's the same folks. It's all, obviously a tight crew from the 80s era into the 90s that were kind of the, you know, the leaders of that genre.
I can tell you that if the equipment fit in the back end of your truck, you went and took it. And that's, I mean, it was that was the practicality of those shows.
Yeah, I love the, and it's the backyards, though, when you see, it's like family, mm-hmm, and everybody's mm-hmm. having, you know, beer or some sweet tea and just sitting around, and all of a sudden they break out all the goods, and this amazing music starts getting played. And you realize these guys are pretty good. Oh, they're professionals at this.
Yeah. Oh, by the way.
But it's just hanging out, you know, and I always love that. Yeah.
That's right. And some of it is intentionally recorded that way because it's ambiance. Mm-hmm. It's not because they couldn't do more. It's because what they wanted was this raw sound. And that's, you know, let's face it, that's what Ozzy Osbourne, those guys did.
You know, in any group or genre that employs the triangle, I'm a big fan of that. And you have Tony Balfa on the triangle in that song.
That's
so,
right.
You know, I always loved that. You know, there's a Swedish group called Steven Seagulls, and they do a lot of heavy metal replays but they do it in bluegrass.
I've seen them.
And sometimes they don't have a triangle, but they'll use tools. Like just stuff they pick up from the shop, you know. And
hold the ridge.
Yeah, it's just, I love the bing.
That's fun stuff. Kathy and Greg went out of town for 11 days and left their garden on drip, which was okay, except it turned out to have a whole lot of growth. What she says, or they say, is that it exploded. The cucumbers are woven all over the tomatoes, and squash leaves are so big they are hiding the squash. I've thinned and fertilized where I can. Any suggestions? That's exactly what you need to do. The good news is that all of those things are vigorous and they're going to keep growing. So you may want to take something and contain the cucumber vine at least a little bit. My daughter-in-law is growing pumpkin, fancy pumpkins, and her pumpkin vine has turned into a monster that eats everything. So I see exactly what you're looking at in your pictures, but I also know it just from being up close. You have to get those cucumber vines off of the tomatoes, but they will regenerate. So if you can move them, that's fine. But if you have to cut them, they're going to grow back anyway. So that will be all right. Jeff in Carrollton says some of his tomato plants have the top leaves turning pale green to yellow. When we look at the very top part of a plant that is where it's turning yellow, you've got two things going on. One of two things. You've either got a damage to the root system, or you've got a waterlogged root system because it's not able to get the nutrients all the way up to the top. If we looked at the plant and saw that the bottom leaves were turning yellow, yellow, no other signs of spotting, no other signs of blight, just turning yellow, we understand that that's a nitrogen thing because the leaves are giving up their nitrogen to the top of the plant. When it's that the water can't get to the top of the plant or the nutrients, it's a root malfunction or a physical vascular system malfunction. And in that case, there's not a great deal you can do about it except that if the bed is staying real wet, you'll certainly want to help it dry out. And to do that, you can pull away the mulch if you've got some mulch there. If you don't have any mulch there, put some mulch there to help ameliorate the flow of water into that particular bed. You can spray the plants with a fertilizer and green that back up, but if you don't, go ahead and do something about the fact that they can't take up any water at this point. Either they're too dry or they're just waterlogged. You have to solve that problem too. But I know Jeff will do that. He's a good. Y'all are such good gardeners. Y'all make all of us so inspired. Those of us who are gardeners. I was laughing the other week. The first time I think I tied up a tomato plant, the first time I can remember, I was about 5 years old and the tomato was taller than me. And my grandfather wanted the suckers out of the plant to root. He was one of those people that insisted on growing them and then taking them off the plant, and sometimes he would root them. So I can remember having to get up into the tomato. It was tomato stakes, you know, in those years with everything tied. And I had to get in there and untie them and do a little moving around and get another leaf in there, another little stem over here. And I remember him telling me that I did pretty good. So that was enough. That was inspired me to go ahead and do it again. But there are a lot of things that we try to do as gardeners, and sometimes they work. In this particular case, I'd be willing to bet that Jeff's tomato bed is good, but that it's just stayed too wet for a period of time. I wouldn't be surprised at that. Wow, that's a fast morning, Lance. My goodness.
It usually is around these parts on a Saturday from 8 to 10.
I just looked at the clock and realized that we're about to be run out of this place, which is kind of a shame. But you can always get in touch with me, mamaonair@yahoo.com. I had to give that address to somebody the other day, and they said, "Are you where? What is on air?" And I said, "Well, it's on air, you know, like on the air, you know." Oh,
you've defied gravity, is what they were.
What are you talking about?
This alien talk? Are you defying gravity now?
Yes, in fact, now the ETs. I have to say, I'm happy that all that stuff's going to come out. I'm afraid it's going to be so much less interesting than we want it to be.
Yeah.
All the UFO files. Our stories may turn out to be better than the factual history of unidentified flying objects.
I'm just curious what they have type of plants. I mean, honestly, if they are real and these are living creatures from all over the place. I mean, send us some pics to the garden mama.
What do they eat?
Yeah, I want to see what you're working with here.
What's your favorite flower, Mr. Green Alien?
Exactly.
What does your mother want for Mother's Day?
Yeah, Mike called earlier and he was laughing. He goes, you know, it always reminds me when she was talking about, you know, plant things and the beauty of your garden and your yard and all the beautiful flowers. It's the scene from Alice in Wonderland as she descends into the city, and there's just these wild, crazy, cool plants everywhere.
Well, and that is, of course, everybody talks now about getting on the internet and getting lost and going down the rabbit hole.
That's right.
But that's the rabbit hole they're talking about, is Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah.
And we don't necessarily think about that, but that's, in fact, where we're going, is literally down the tube and into all of that beauty that we've never seen before. And that's pretty cool stuff. Pretty cool stuff.
What if they bubble up from, like, they've already been here, but they've been living underground, and they have all these botanical gardens and just amazing stuff.
Oh, yeah. Shangri-La.
Like, what's the tour going to cost? You know, I mean, is it
It's kind of like getting my eyes fixed so I don't have to wear glasses. I'll pay the price if I can.
Whatever it is.
But it would be there. The whole business of Shangri-La and any of those movies and stories over time where they, you know, you go in a cave and suddenly it becomes this other world, you know, those sorts of things. We all hope for that.
Don't we? Yeah.
And that's the same thing, I think, that we all hope for in a certain way with this notion of the aliens or the others that may have come to visit us at some time. I would love that if those stories of the ships rising out of the ocean turned out to be true. Can we go to Atlantis next week? Come on, Lance, let's go.
I'm ready.
Hey, thanks, y'all. Appreciate everybody being here today. We will be back next week with more Garden Mama Show.
The Garden Mama Show is a production of SuperTalk Mississippi Media. Download past episodes at supertalk.fm and contact Garden Mama anytime at mamaonair@yahoo.com. Thanks for choosing the Garden Mama Show.
It's a laid-back Sunday afternoon. You wish would never end.
The homemade taste of bluebell and good friends gathered round. The good old days are being made right now.
Bluebell doesn't fudge on deliciousness. Our new black raspberry fudge ice cream in pints and half gallons combines black raspberry flavored ice cream with dark chocolate flavored chunks and a chocolate fudge swirl. The result is real. Taste the truth.
The good old days are being made right now.
The good old days are being made right now.
Look for Bluebell ice cream at your local grocer and pick up your favorite flavor today.
Three families.
A SuperTalk Mississippi Media production.